This episode of The Gradys is made possible by the generosity of our Patreon supporters. To learn how you can help support the show and get access to exclusive content produced exclusively for supporters, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/neozaz.
Hello and welcome to The Gradys, the great 80s movie debate, where we see if the movies of the 1980s still hold up today. If you're a child of the 80s, a fan of classic films, or just a movie geek, you've come to the right place.
That's good.
I was like, was there a hidden word in there somewhere? Chris is laughing at.
No, yeah. He's just sitting here staring at me.
I'm amazed.
Like with adoration.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing this from memory.
Very impressed.
I'm impressed with myself.
You know why? Because my fucking memory's gone.
Can you say what I just said?
Isn't even know what show he's on right now.
Yeah. Episode, since the Friday night.
Try and do what I just did.
Hello and welcome to The Gradys, the great 80s movie debate, where we discuss movies from the 80s. If you're a fan... Wait, if you're a fan of the 80s shit and you like what we do, here you go.
That was it, word for word.
Verbatim.
Very nice.
Thank you.
I thought I was going to say, hello and welcome to The Gradys. Every Gradys has a great movie, but only the greats one will make you watch them too.
That's even better.
Yeah. That's not it. That was pretty good.
Today, I'm joined by State Puff Marshmallow Matt.
Today, we are talking about 1986's Labyrinth because y'all voted for it the most. In an overwhelming landslide. I mean, this was like Reagan beating Mondale. Like, this was like the number one vote getter. Labyrinth from 1986, starring Jennifer Connelly, David Bowie, and directed by Jim Henson.
I am shocked that this won. I thought this was a custom setup for E.T. That's what I was expecting to do. I'm shocked Labyrinth won and by so many votes.
Yeah. Chris and I were like, what the fuck is with Labyrinth?
I said, of all the movies, like this one, it was the least on my list, the bottom of my list.
Well.
And it won.
Suck it, Chris.
I'm sucking it now.
Okay. I can tell. My name is Dave, and I'm joined by my illustrious panel of 80s experts, including Christy.
Just fear me. Love me. Do as I say, and I will be your slave.
Is that what happens in the bedroom over there?
There's fear.
There's fear. And Matt.
Turn back, Sarah. There, it's done. Don't ask me to do it again.
Yes, we'll ask you to do that like every 10 minutes.
Non-stop.
And Chris.
This podcast has no power over me.
Ooh.
Listen to you. You did watch the movie.
I did.
Yay.
I didn't think you were going to watch this.
I almost didn't.
I almost didn't.
But I couldn't find a copy, but you said it's on Netflix, yep. So I said shit.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this and you want to have fun along with us and haven't seen the movie in a while, stop it now. It's on Netflix streaming constantly. Did you watch it on Netflix?
I did. Yes,
I did too. Did you guys watch it there? Or do you have your own copy?
We thought we had a copy, but couldn't find it. So we ended up watching on Netflix.
I think he thought we had a copy, but actually it was on the Dark Crystal.
I know I've watched this with you before in the home viewing, so we must have rented it or something, I guess.
I don't know.
Well, we usually talk first about our history of the movie. I think you guys kind of just did that there. Chris, do you have any other history with this?
I think I saw it like on nine theaters. I think I'm like on cable, HBO, Prism, something like that. And I remember really just enjoying it and watching it and because who was behind it all. It was Evil Muppets.
Evil Muppets.
Yeah. And I did like it back then.
Why did you choose this, Matt? I mean, other than for anyone that doesn't know this, listening to this, you guys have a separate show, Muppets in Character. You're both huge Muppet and Henson devotees, so much so that you have a room in your house dedicated to it.
Yes, I do.
Why did you choose this? Because of that reason?
No, actually, I chose it more from the history of the show itself because we've done, I think it may have been like, if not the first episode, the first five episodes, I did that whole Turn Back Sarah thing, and we talked about Labyrinth, and the whole crappy David Bowie impression has come up. It's even been used crossed over in A Star Is in Character. So it was more of a reference to what we have, having brought it up in the Grady's, than actually what I thought of the movie. I just was looking at a list of movies, saw Labyrinth. I'm like, you know what? Maybe time to try to do this, not thinking it would get picked. So it was more of the history of it on this show than anything else that made me pick it.
Excellent. All right. Well, that makes sense. I mean, this fits right into you, both of your wheelhouses, more so than Chris and I. So hopefully we have a good discussion. I know that we've talked about this on other shows in the past, and this show, the Henson Lucas collaboration is something to be admired. Like whatever you think about this movie, I love it when talented people come together. And if you include The Empire Strikes Back, this is the second time that this has happened. Do you feel that way about things other than this? Like whether it works or not, when talented people recognize the talent in others and want to work together, does that inspire you to watch it?
For something like this, yes. Because at the time, they were both huge, I don't know, but influencer. I was a huge fan of both their work, so it seemed like a no-brainer to want to see this movie. And not every big collaboration partnership is something I necessarily would run out and want to see, but this one, and if you put Lucas and Spielberg together, I don't know if Henson and Spielberg ever did anything, but if they had, I would have been all over that. So definitely, at least in this part.
And ironically, they both sold out to Disney.
Yeah. Well, one didn't sell out.
He was planning to, though.
Yeah, but he already passed away, so it's all speculation.
When did Jim Henson die?
1990.
So it wasn't too long after this. He was probably sick when he made this movie?
No, he got a sudden illness. It was like pneumonia.
Wow.
Okay.
This was, though, I think, the last thing he directed, wasn't it?
I think it was.
Maybe not last one he made, but the last one he directed, I think.
But it wasn't. Okay, so he wouldn't have been sick. Because now that you say that, it reminds me of the Dennis Leary joke.
Yeah.
Like, I feel a cold coming on.
Second time we've referenced that joke on this show.
Yeah, like,
and so. The second time, it's pissed me off.
Matt and Christy hate my guts. Well, don't hate me. Hate Dennis Leary.
No problem. I've seen that new show.
I like the new show.
Oh, so do I.
You like everything. Two and a half popcorns.
I do.
I hated it. Two and a half popcorns. Yeah, I love it. Two and a half popcorns. So you said that you mentioned that this was a thing that you liked coming into this as well. That right. It's a collaboration of two creative
geniuses.
I hate the word genius. It's thrown around way too much, but
prolific creators.
There you go. That's good. Better. I like that. How could you not say that about both these guys?
Yeah.
They've made millions of people happy.
Millions, yes. You're absolutely right.
All right, so this was coming into this, whatever you thought about it, it's boding well.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Coming into it, yes.
All right, so I had forgotten a lot about this movie. I hadn't seen this in a long time. I did try to show it to my son when he was younger, and he was not interested.
Smart kid.
And I was surprised that he wasn't, because...
Well, I watched it today with Luke, and...
And he's 12?
He's 11
or 12.
Yeah. Shit.
You don't know how old your son is?
Oh, wait, hold on. She'll be 16. Come on. I'm tired from Friday nights, though.
It's Sunday.
He's 11. I've had
three beers, and I know that your son's 12, I think.
He's not 12.
He's 11.
He's 2004.
He's almost 12.
2004.
He'll be 12 this year.
Correct. That'd be 12 in March. Can we move on?
What did he think?
Well, we were watching it. I sit on the couch with the table there and a notepad. I'm all ready. And he, as soon as it came on, he reached to his right and grabbed his Game Boy, started playing that.
He wasn't interested and from the start.
I was telling him, I said, put that down. This is a movie that you can watch. He put it down for like maybe 15, 20 minutes. And then he picked it back up again. And I heard Batman Lego on his on his Game Boy.
Would you guys, especially Matt and Christy, would you classify this as more of a family movie than anything else?
Yeah.
Well, really? I mean, it's edgy.
It is edgy at times.
It is a little dark.
There's even cursing.
Yeah.
That's true. I was surprised by that. I forgot about that.
And there's bulges.
Oh yeah.
What is that? You know, that did bother me. It's like his costume is fantastic from the waist up. It's like they ran out of time or budget or something and just went, just throw these on.
Yeah, they were wearing granny pants.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, his jacket, his shirt, his hair, the jewelry, and then just silver pants.
Silver pants. Tight silver pants.
Yeah.
Well, his bulge comes and goes.
Literally.
Like, early on, he almost looks like a eunuch when you see his bulge. Yeah. And then later...
it's enormous.
Oh, he's got, like, 7 tube socks in there.
And his penis.
And his penis. What's going on with it?
I don't know. But your eyes go there. Your eyes can't not go there.
We've already had people posting pictures of his bulge on our Facebook page.
And where am I now?
Let me see.
You're wearing your pictures?
Knock on it. Ready?
Here it is. Wow. You look like a baby face.
Oh, Christ.
He's going to lip sync word up when you're done.
All right. Well, the early... I had forgotten about this. This is very early CGI.
Very, yes.
So whatever you think about it, this is groundbreaking already with that owl.
Who?
The owl.
Who?
Oh, you asshole.
You didn't get that, did you?
I didn't get it the first time. You son of a bitch. That owl, it kind of reminded me of the beginning of Amazing Stories, the TV series.
Oh, God, I forgot about that.
Because there was an owl that flew around in that, and Spielberg made that, and it looked exactly like this.
Huh.
So already, whatever you're going to say about this movie, it's already groundbreaking for 1986.
Right.
I had Clash of Titans kind of memories there a little bit.
Yeah, it kind of is reminiscent, although that was stop motion, but I mean
computer.
Yeah, the sheen of it kind of reminds you of the metal owl from Clash of the Titans.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to have to ask for your guys' expertise in this, especially Christy.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to go down these names. I'm writing and pausing every name as I go down the thing. You know who all these people are. So tell me what else they've done. David Gels.
He does Gonzo and Rizzo.
No, Steve Whitmire's
Rizzo. No, okay. He does Gonzo. What else does he do?
Do you need a little help?
Yeah, I don't remember. Dave mainly does
Zoot.
Gonzo
is his big thing.
Gonzo's the big one.
He does it now, which is, there's very few guys that still do their original characters in the Muppet Show. He is still doing Gonzo.
So how old is this man?
He is 69.
Okay.
69!
So
gotta come to Halloween Horror Nights.
I write down these names, and the two of you have educated me on this kind of stuff over the years, because I wouldn't know who these people were if it wasn't for you and their involvement in Star Wars and Sesame Street and things like that. So, okay, so he's Gonzo. That's his main character.
Yeah, mostly. In fact, I'm looking, and he's done the puppeteering for other characters that are voiced by other characters. I don't see many. Looks like he's taken up Bunsen. He does Bunsen Honeydew. That's one he still does. But other than that, the other ones are like either one-timers or he's doing the puppeteering because the voice of that actor has two characters in a scene. So those are the main ones, it looks like.
Okay. What about Steve Whitmire?
Steve Whitmire
took over Kermit.
Yes. He was the young guns at the tail end of the Muppet Show. He was like 19 or something when he started. And now he's the old veteran. He's this middle generation puppeteer. He was there... In the last years of Jim Henson, he's been doing a lot of the work now, is really good friends, if not best friends, of Bill Beretta, who is the usually the Muppet lead in all these. And him and Dave Goles will probably be one of the first to retire when they fully hand it off to Disney. I don't think that's going to be it's going to be a long time from now, but Steve Whitmire. Without Steve Whitmire,
there would be no Muppets.
There would be
right
no
now.
Kermit in the forefront.
Yeah.
To this day. So Steve.
And it took a while for him to get the voice, too.
Yeah. Steve Whitmire pretty much kept those classic characters, the face of the Muppets, going after Jim Henson's passing. In fact, right after Jim Henson passed away, they did a Muppet Show special, like right away, because Jim Henson always felt as passing on as should be celebrated rather than mourned. And they kind of ran with that and did a special, and he immediately picked up Kermit and did it in that special. So it's like the last time you saw Kermit was Jim Henson. The next time you saw him, which is very shortly after that, was Steve Whitmire. So right away he was doing the character.
Does he do all of Jim Henson's characters?
No. Oddly enough, Bill Beretta is taking over more at this point than he has, because Bill Beretta's got a lower voice range. So he does like Dr. Teeth and Rolf and Swedish Chef, where he's Steve Whitmire's original character in A Muppet Show was Bean Bunny. So that was, if you know that character, that's a super high voice. So he's taking over the higher range characters while Bill Beretta's taking over the lower range characters.
All right. Well, see, I knew that I was talking to the right people. What about Karen Prell?
Karen Prell does a lot of Muppets. I think she was more with
the Fraggles.
The Fraggles, and I think she, let me look, because I think she did. She did Sesame Street.
Yeah, she did.
But not a lot. Not a lot.
Yeah, there's not a whole.
There's not a lot of female Muppeteers.
No, and there's not. And oddly enough, the most famous female characters are usually voiced by men. I mean, Miss Piggy was Frank Oz, and it wasn't Frank Oz. That was someone else. That might have been Dave Gold. No, I don't think it was. But
well, there's another woman called Sherry Weiser. She was on there too. I'm only listing the people that they listed because to me, they're. If they're involved with Henson and in this movie, this big budget movie that he's directing, they have to have some kind of history with him. He's not going to just hire strangers. Oh, like he seems to me like he's the kind of guy that's loyal to the people that he knows he can count on.
What's very weird that when you say that, which was very weird, the only Muppeteer that Christie has had at length and detailed conversation with, Mike Quinn, is not. This is like the only Henson thing he hasn't been involved in.
I thought I saw his name in the credits.
Oh, I haven't seen it on IMDb.
He's in this movie.
Is he? Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know why it's not on the IMDb page then.
When I get to the... Yeah, Mike Quinn. I'll give you the list now. I have this at the end, but I'll tell you now.
We did turn off the credits because we took a nap because we're old.
I on purpose watched the credits because, I mean, I was watching with my son at that point, and I said, I bet there's a ton of Star Wars people in this as we go through it. And I only know these people from Tim and Chris. From Star Wars in character. Mike Quinn is in Labyrinth.
Really?
Oh, yay.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
As is Tim Rose.
Yes, that surprised me with all the full-suited characters they had.
The Goblin Corps consists of Warwick Davis.
Yeah, I assumed he had to be, too. I didn't look it up, but I think I just assumed he was in it.
Jack Purvis.
Okay.
Kenny Baker.
Yeah, that one I saw, I think, on IMDb.
R2-D2 himself. There are other people in there, too. Nick Gillard, the swordsmith, is involved with Labyrinth. Jareth's stunt double was Nick Gillard.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, I mean, there's a ton of Star Wars connections in this, not surprisingly, because it's Lucas.
But right.
That's what I was looking for in the credits, people that I recognize their names. So, yeah, you, Christie's good buddy Mike Quinn, he's there somewhere.
Okay.
Mike Quinn's cool.
There's even further connections in this movie for me, past Star Wars. The mother-in-law in the opening scenes, that is Shelley Thompson, probably best known at this point for her role as Barb Leahy in Trailer Park Boys.
That one's just for you.
Yeah, I mean, she used to, she was like a character who appeared here and there, but now with the resurgence on Netflix, she's a permanent character. So people that don't know her, didn't really maybe remember her, or, well, you can't not remember this character with the storyline she was in, but they definitely are seeing more of her now than ever. And then one of the fire, whatever characters, were they called Fireys or something?
Yeah.
Well, two of them. Two of them were voiced by Danny John Jules, who plays Cat in Red Dwarf, another one of my all-time favorite shows.
So you got favorites all over.
Yeah. Yeah. This movie's like custom cast for me.
What about Ron Mueck? I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly. I'm listing the people in their order that they were coming out. To me, they're major people in this movie. Is that a Muppeteer?
I mean, I don't recognize that name, but let's see.
How about Anthony Asbury?
No, Ron Mueck. I don't see him having anything to do with the Muppets. He seems to be like a stunt actor.
Okay. The two that you can't help but know their name is Brian Henson.
Yes.
Is involved in the movie. And is he like the major creative force behind that now? Or at least he was for a while.
He was.
Is he not anymore?
He still has Jim Henson Studios, but they're, since the Muppets are sold off to Disney,
Who knows?
They don't do anything.
They do Dinosaur Train.
Oh. Brian Henson has this really bad habit of making grandiose plans and then announcing them right away. And then either, I don't know if he loses interest or funding doesn't come through or plans fall through. He's announced so many projects, including a sequel to this movie and a sequel to Dark Crystal and this like adult themed Muppet show, or not Muppet, but puppet show that was going to be on TV. And like, they all fall through. I don't know what happens. I wish he would. And I can understand him getting excited and wanting to get fans of the Henson Studios excited about a project, but they always fall through. It's so frustrating. And now, they're, and I hope this is true, but it's hard to get excited about it. They're talking about a Farscape movie. They have a script and a director, but who knows? You know, is it like every other announcement where we get excited about it, then nothing happens?
Well, I remember seeing him from time, like, you guys are more Muppets people. I am a big Sesame Street fan.
You are? Oh, yeah.
I mean, from not only when I watch, but my son, I can't even tell you how much he loves Sesame Street.
Oh, wow.
And we used to watch, and I remember from time to time, Brian Henson would pop up on Sesame Street as a person, as a human on Sesame Street. It was like, if they needed a crowd of people, it was Maria and Louise and Gordon. And there'd be a guy there that looked like Jim Henson, but when he was 30.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
And I'd be like, I would say to my son, that is Jim Henson's son. And I didn't even know that for a fact, but you can't help
it. It's his son or possibly clone.
His doppelganger.
They look a lot alike.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw the sci-fi show, is it called the Jim Henson Creature Shop Challenge?
No, just Creature Shop.
Creature Shop. It was last year. It was the same idea as Face Off, but they were competing for a job with Jim Henson's Creature Shop. So every week there'd be a new challenge. And Brian is getting older. He's actually, he might not be far, if not right up where close to the age his father, when his father passed away. And it was looking more like him the more I see him.
Yeah, it's creepy.
Yeah.
It's like Julian Lennon and John Lennon.
If he were to grow a beard, I mean, they would be identical, I think.
Right. The other ones that everyone knows, you already mentioned Frank Oz, he's involved in this. And the other one is Kevin Clash.
Yeah.
I know that one.
Go ahead, Chris.
Elmo.
And at this point, with the stuff that went on with Kevin Clash, I see his name and I just go, eesh.
Yeah, we did too.
But this is like kind of an all-star lineup of what would eventually become the Muppets. Would you say that? I mean, with Whitmore and Gels, and Clash's.
They're
already the Muppets.
Okay.
Yeah, Muppets are 70, so they've been working together. So it's them stretching their boundaries of what they've already done with Jim Henson.
Okay. And Henson, like I've already said, has directed this, and I did not remember that Terry Jones wrote this movie.
I was shocked when I saw that too, because I had no recollection of that.
How awesome is that?
That is. I had to explain he was the fat one in Monty Python and the Christie.
The fat one. So you want to talk about, I mean, we already talked about this Henson-Lucas collaboration. This, to me now, as soon as I saw his name on there, this has become a Henson-Lucas-Python collaboration.
Yeah.
Which doesn't get much better than
that. Two or three,
go wrong.
Well, why do you hate Monty Python?
I just never found that kind of sense of humor funny.
You're an asshole.
So you like Jimmy Fallon. Your judge of sense of humor means nothing to me.
Yeah, you like it when a guy plays...
Number one talk show on.
Plays Twister with his guests and doesn't have to write any jokes.
Go on, number one talk show. Go on.
Yeah,
that just shows how stupid the average American is.
There's no accounting for taste.
Number one talk show.
Okay, good. I can't wait till I see him whip out Pictionary and play that with, Martin Short. That's great. That takes a lot of thought and writing.
He's just ordinary. He's not like a guy put on an act. He's a fan of the guests.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's what I want to see.
Number one talk show one.
That's hilarious.
A guy that has no creativity and laughs at his own jokes.
How's my Python doing? Oh, wait.
They just had a reunion. They're all like 70.
Who cares? We said we're all fucking dead.
Wow.
Whoa!
That's horrible.
Even Kevin Kline. Is he part of that?
No, he's fine. Leave Kevin Kline alone.
Why are you pissing on Kevin Kline?
He's not in there.
No.
He's American. No. Not that there was an American in Pod.
One.
The only guy I liked was a guy who played Q, John Cleese. That's it.
The guy who played Q. That's what you're going to remember him for.
Yep, Monty Python sucks ass.
Not all the other stuff. John Cleese is the guy that plays Q.
the only way I know.
In the shitty Pierce Brosnan Bond movies.
Oh my God, I'm out.
Chris is leaving.
I'm leaving.
All right, let's move on.
I love that. He could attack Monty Python, wish they'd all dead. You'd say that those movies are shitty, and he's like, I'm gone.
I'm out. Number one talk show. Go on.
The movie enters with Jennifer Connelly. When were you first aware of her and her, what did you say about her? Like you hadn't watched it as of the last time I talked to you.
No.
And you said, is that the one with the hot girl?
Yeah. Cause I know she's in it. I know her from
Hot Girls, like 14 in this movie.
But is it wrong that I was watching her boobs bounce?
Yes.
Yes. Cause she's 15 or something like in this movie.
I wasn't touching her.
That doesn't matter.
When were you I know first- her from that movie in The Target.
Oh, career opportunities?
That's the one.
That's I have awesome. That written down, too, because we all worked at the movie theater, yep. And that poster came out, and it was career opportunities.
And a John McClane tank top.
And she was wearing a very skimpy tank top, hanging her boobs over Frank Whaley's head.
Yeah.
And we were all like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah. I think that's what we say. Oh, then word came out that, oh, that was the girl from Labyrinth.
She's about 15. If you assume this was filmed in 1985.
Right.
She was born in 1970. She's not that much older than us.
Well, then there's nothing wrong with me looking at her boobs when I was that age.
When you were that age.
When you were that age.
Yes.
Not so much.
And when it was raining, I was looking harder.
What are your thoughts on her? Because she, when she comes on the screen, she is awful.
She is a fucking bitch.
She is awful.
This movie needed you. If you want to watch this movie, if you haven't watched this movie, if you want to not get a... my biggest problem with this is that it takes me... almost the entire movie to root for her because she starts out such a flaming bitch. If they started this movie, the second you saw David Bowie, completely different character.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Do you both feel the same way?
Yes. I forgot how just awful she was.
She is just such a spoiled, awful teenage girl. That, like, if you did start it 20 minutes later, once she gets into the labyrinth, she's delightful.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I guess that's the idea is that she redeems herself, but she's just that. I mean, she's beyond awful. She is unlikable. You are yelling at her in your head to just shut up and stop being such a horrible person that, like I said, that when all of a sudden she changes her mind, you don't buy it. It takes me forever to buy that she gives a flying fuck about that baby.
I felt sorry for that. That poor baby was crying, and she wouldn't do anything about it. Yep.
She hates the baby.
Yep.
Yeah, and it was sad. Like, the baby was crying, and she was like just like teasing it, and not they picked the baby up.
And she's rough with it. I can't believe that she's just evil.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe that kid doesn't have shaken baby syndrome.
But after Bowie tossed the baby in the air,
You could tell that was not a real baby.
I know, hysterical.
That was a cabbage patch
fake,
doll.
As fake as the baby in Sniper.
American Sniper, yeah. That. Christ.
That was bad. And I did not remember that Zev Zaneska is her dad.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I knew I recognized him, but I didn't know
it was him.
It's Zev Zaneska from Star Wars. It's, what's his name? What's his real name?
Oh, God.
Shit, I don't remember.
He passed away in the past, like, year or 2 years, too.
Yeah, he was in Highlander. I mean,
he was the vigilante in Highlander.
Yeah, that's her dad. Well, as soon as he came on, I was like, fucking Zev Zaneska. And my son was there. I was like, shit.
Shit, sorry. Yeah. So, we'll say that word.
But she's awful.
She is awful.
She's awful to that baby. She's like, I don't want to babysit. Like, just shut up and babysit.
Right. And having the baby sleep, isn't that really babysitting?
Well.
Put her down and put the baby down and soothe it.
She's an actress.
Oh, okay.
That's how Christy acts. She's an actress.
What?
Why she's such a bitch sometimes.
Chris just goes, what?
Oh, you see the look I'm getting. Oh, man, that was a bad move.
Matt sleeps outside.
So Bowie arrives shortly after that, and can he be any more super cool?
He is cool, but...
Come on, you hate Bowie.
I do not hate Bowie. He's cool, but his teeth sometimes bother me.
Well,
he's British.
That's 80s British dentistry. Not much you can do about that.
Are you guys still on board, the two of you down there? Are you still on board with him as soon as you see him?
Yeah. I like him in this.
Okay, you kind of light up. Like, yeah. he's I really wish
this is where the movie would start. You don't even necessarily need her wishing the baby away. I mean, I understand the motivation behind it, but it's like, if you started it with him being, the baby being gone, like, if you started it with her parents leaving, her babysitting, checking the baby, it's gone, then there's Bowie, you would have such, I think, such a better movie for Sarah's character than what we, how we start this movie.
I agree.
It's the part where, and I actually rewound it and watched it again because it looks so real, because it is real, when he has that goddamn crystal ball.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I went online, I saw how it was done.
Yeah.
I didn't see it. Isn't that amazing? CGI. It looked like it was Bowie doing it.
Hell yeah. That orb trick is something.
And I loved it. I really did love that part.
And he does it several times throughout the movie. Whenever he has an orb in his hands, you're like, he's going to do something.
It was great.
He's great. Yeah, like, seriously.
Was it him, though?
That's him.
No, it wasn't.
What do you mean?
It was a juggler.
It was another juggler with, like, juggler. Kind of, like...
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's like where Bowie would put his hands behind his back, and he'd put them between under his shoulders and do the...
No!
Yes! Yeah.
That's why I like it, because I thought it was fake, so I looked into it, and it's a juggler.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom.
Doing Are you it. Serious?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What?
It wasn't Bowie. It was a juggler who could do it.
I can't. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I never saw that in it. I didn't do any research other than watch the movie. IMDb
trivia. It was.
You asshole.
Why? I think that's a good thing. That is, that's a demonstration of how you can still do a practical effect, even though the principal performer can't do what you need him to do and still have it completely flawless instead of just relying on computers.
It looks so real. And I was like, this looks real, but I'm like, Bowie can't do that. But he can't be doing that. Is he doing that?
But it was real. It was just someone else's hand.
Yeah, it was so cool. I love how it goes from hand to hand.
Well, that Matt's point is perfectly illustrated in me. I thought that was him. I had no idea that was just him with his hands behind his back and somebody who's lining his hand through his armpits doing that.
Either that or he'd just have his hands to the side and the hand would come up in camera. I mean, it's like, credit Jim Henson for, I mean, he's done shit on camera no one is doing because it's not easy to pull it off. And he always did. And this is another example of that. He used two actors, then turned them into one, and you never knew it.
Yeah, no idea. It was so cool.
Well, you've totally blown me away because I thought that was Bowie. That lends itself to what you're saying. That is brilliant filmmaking.
It really is. It's all in the camera shots and angles. It's so good.
I thought that was Bowie. I thought that that's something like that he would had been practicing for months.
Yeah, I would buy that too. But I guess maybe he did try and just some people just don't have the coordination. I know I can't juggle to save my life, and people have tried to show me how to do it, and I can't do it. And maybe he's got the same type of that's just one thing he can't do, and they end up going this route. Who knows? Or maybe they didn't. This could have been the plan all along.
All right, so Matt found this video of the guy doing the trick behind Bowie's back blind.
Yeah.
Amazing. Really and cool. We'll put that on our Facebook page. But like I said, that lends itself to the artistry of this movie that I had no idea. I thought that was him. Nope. So
he's not that talented, dude.
What the fuck does that mean?
He can sing. He can't play with his balls.
Have you seen the Dancing in the Streets video without any music?
No.
That is hilarious.
That is one of the funniest things.
It's so Homer erotic.
I have not. No, no, no.
Yeah.
I gotta check that out.
Especially when they shake their asses.
Yep.
That's funny. Like, that was... Remember they used to show... We probably talked about this before. They used to show music videos before movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did they? And I saw that one.
Oh, God, really?
At the Budco, they showed Dancing in the Streets with Mick Jagger and David Bowie. I saw True Colors with Cyndi Lauper. Yeah. They used to show like MTV videos on 35mm film before motion pictures. How cool is that?
South America! That's all the only line I know from that opening of that video.
Awesome. So shortly after that, that's when his first appearance, he comes through the window and he says the line that Matt has already said.
And I love it.
I didn't realize it was that early in the movie.
It's early.
Yeah.
Super. I mean, like...
She hasn't even gone to the labyrinth.
Yeah, she hasn't even set foot and he's telling her to turn back.
And that's it, though. Is it one time, I think, in the whole movie?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
And she has 13 hours to solve the labyrinth to get Toby back. And my question to all of you is, why does he even want Toby?
I'm assuming
he wants to make another goblin.
I'm assuming that's how he gets goblins. When people wish for the goblins to take babies away, they take them away, and then after the 13 hours,
it turns goblins. Into a goblin.
That's, I like that.
Is that true?
I have never heard this tale before, so this will be out of the mind of Terry Jones.
No, actually, you know what? They threw out a lot of his stuff. He did the original draft. I was reading a little further. He didn't do the final draft of the movie.
He really originally wanted David Bowie in a fat suit and one of the guys to dress in drag.
And to have a wafer thin.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Because I don't understand that the whole time. I mean, that's there isn't much of a story to this. The main story is that the Goblin King Jareth has this girl's little brother, and I don't even know why he hasn't.
I like that. That makes so much sense, because that's what they all are. And then you open, they're all like, hold on, wait, listen. And all-
so you think everyone there, those little Muppets, those goblins, were abducted children?
Yep. I think there are babies that were wished for the goblins to take them away.
Wow.
Did she say it yet?
Yeah.
Just delighted at that.
So did I, actually, yeah.
Well, that's at least an explanation, because the whole time as I'm watching this, I'm still thinking, like, what's the point? I mean, I know the point is probably that this isn't even happening. She's like tripping or something, isn't she?
I don't know.
She's straight up tripping.
Yeah, like she's doing some kind of like fantastic drugs when her parents leave, making her even more evil, that she's in charge of her little brother and she's wasted.
Yeah, really.
All right, well, she gets into the labyrinth, and you see for the first time one of your main characters, Hoggle. Does she call him Hogwart?
She does.
Yep.
She does, yeah.
So J.K. Rowling ripped this movie off.
She did.
No. That bitch.
It's originally from another British thing.
Okay. What is it from?
It's in something like, darn it. I saw it in the trivia section on IMDb about this.
Well, I
way to be prepared, Christy.
No,
you can't make a statement like that and not back it up.
What your statement is fine. I just, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, what did she say?
What?
I'm suddenly interested.
And the first time you see him, he's pissing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Saw that. Yeah.
That's look. That's
I wrote that down. Peeing. Peeing goblin. Hoggle.
I wrote pissing.
Hogwart originally comes from the famous British humor book, The Complete Molesworth by Jeffrey Williams and Ronald Surley. That's what it says on IMDb.
So wherever it came from, she did not come up with this term.
Right.
No.
Yep.
Okay. Well, did you remember him pissing? Because I did not.
No.
No.
Did you laugh?
I did.
Of course, Chris did.
I laughed.
I saw goblin. I almost saw goblin cock.
Instead of goblin cock.
Cocklin. And the worm helps her, sort of.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of, like, the thing I think that I admire most about this movie, and tell me if you agree or disagree, is the imagery of the movie. This whole thing is imagery.
I agree 100%. This is a visually awesome movie.
Yeah. Because there isn't much of a story.
No.
And some of the things in it are embarrassing and don't hold up. But the imagery of this movie, and shortly after that worm sort of helps her, there's this cool thing that they do several times in the labyrinth with Bowie's face.
Yeah, I read this. There's seven of them?
I didn't see seven.
I saw two. That's all I saw.
What did you guys see? Did you see them all?
I don't remember that many.
I think we just saw, I just remember seeing the one.
That would warrant another viewing, because shortly after that, there's a very, it's subdued. It's like a matte painting almost of the labyrinth. And his face is on the wall.
Oh, wow.
I didn't see that one.
When she first learns to turn the corner.
I'm looking at, I have a page of them all now. It's like plain as day now, but I didn't notice.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're very cool. There's the other one that probably everyone sees is there's three different rocks that are in pieces, but when they line up.
That's what I saw.
They're his face.
That is awesome.
That is amazing.
It is cool.
That's kind of stuff that, like, if that had been done with CGI, you'd be like,
Yeah.
But because it's done with practical things, you're like, holy shit, that's cool.
Yep.
There's one I saw, they're walking through the forest, and the tree branches made a face.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah. There's only two I saw, was the rocks and that one.
I saw the rocks and early when she first gets in the labyrinth. His face is on one of the walls.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
It's very subtle.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can see it. And I say again, that poor baby. That child.
That's a shame.
Like, that, she's crying and surrounded by goblins. I sure hope that Jim Henson and George Lucas put money aside for that kid's future therapy.
Yeah. Well, you know, his father was one of the puppeteers.
Okay.
That and he's a creature creator now.
Who is that?
Toby Sprout? Can't remember his last name.
So his name's actually Toby.
Yeah.
So
they had to, it was supposed to be Freddy, but he wouldn't respond to anything but Toby. So they had to change it to Toby.
Okay. That makes me feel better. Yeah. Like you saying that the kid's dad was there and involved in the shots, because this is like borderline child abuse.
Yeah. It's Oh yeah. Call the cops. It was awful. His nose was, he was always snotty and red in the face, crying. Poor kid.
Yeah. Toby Froud's his name, or Froud. F-R-O-U-D, Froud. And he's doing special effects. He's done stuff on The Chronicles of Narnia, Paranorman, a couple other things that look like they're coming. Yeah, this one's not out yet. It's called I'm Not a Serial Killer. He did special effects for that. So he's carrying on his father's legacy in a sense.
He must have had nightmares as a child.
Yeah, maybe.
You know? About this shit?
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where, like, you see, like, him and, like, someone like Drew Barrymore in E.T. Like, you almost wonder if Spielberg, like, I mean, I read these things about how Spielberg, he totally fucked with her mind. Like E.T.'s leaving now, you're never going to see him again. And she's crying.
That's filmmaking.
Yeah, that's right. Like, you mess with kids to get them to perform. Yeah. And this is a baby.
Yeah.
Did he give her a bottle of liquor to calm her down after the filming or something? Is that what started all that?
I think you're right.
Deleted scene.
Poison Ivy only exists because of Steven Spielberg. He should got an executive producer credit. All right, well, that leads into one of the first musical numbers. I got to hear what you guys think about this with the magic dance
scene.
God,
magic,
she wouldn't stop fucking saying that all day today.
Dance, magic, dance.
Okay, does this hold up for you? I mean, we'll talk about the end movie, you know, whether it holds up for you or not, but what about this singular scene? When you watch this morning?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. What are you thinking when you're watching this?
They could cut this along with the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
Chris, do you agree?
I love this.
But do you love it because it's now a cult thing and it's kitschy, or do you think it still is good?
No, I like it because it's kitschy.
It's awful.
It is awful.
It is awful.
All the music, the score doesn't bother me. All his performances, his singing pieces, they could all be taken out because they don't do anything to the story and they don't hold up. In fact, I might do a fan edit where I take out the first 10 minutes and those parts.
That would be interesting because this is, it's embarrassing. It's really embarrassing. His high pants, his little penis, his bad dancing. You remind me of the babe.
Yeah.
The babe with the power. voodoo.
You do?
Voodoo. You do.
Yeah. Stop doing it now, okay?
Holy shit. Like, this is like the kind of thing that people make fun. Did you guys ever see the Flight of the Conchords where they do the Bowie song?
Yeah, I have. I don't think Chris has seen that one.
No.
Bowie's in space. It's so perfect. And it is this. It's like, it's this voice, this Bowie persona that I think comes through on this, that people can do their Bowie impressions and stuff like that, more so than even Turn Back Sarah.
Yeah.
This is something else.
Yeah.
I don't disagree at all.
People like it though.
Yeah.
Have at it.
It's good Bowie music. Baby.
Slap that baby, make it free.
Is that one of the lines?
Slap that baby, make him free.
I just say it's not bad music for Bowie. I'm just not a big, I like some Bowie songs, but I don't think I have a full album of his stuff. And if you like Bowie, this fits right in with the stuff I'm familiar with. It just seems like out of place in the rest of the movie now. Now, maybe not then, but now it sure does.
I kind of wish he had done the Laughing Gnome.
The whole movie is classic, like 80s Bowie. Like you can kind of devote, I'm a huge Bowie fan. And in fact, I have the Ziggy Stardust poster like hanging up in my room upstairs. God. Like I love Bowie. I think he's there's nobody else like him.
Gareth played with balls.
So when he's doing this stuff, this is like 80s classic 80s Bowie, and these songs the songs are not like what
you were going to say. Suck.
I was going to say
maybe they
suck.
Don't hold up with the rest of his music. Then I don't know.
I don't like to me. Like to me, he's made unbelievable music. Like through his whole career, like 70s, 80s, 90s, the stuff that the thing that amazes me about him is he's always had the ability to morph into the next thing.
Yes.
Like when he was doing 70s music, it was 70s music. When he was doing 80s music, that was 80s music. And then you get into the 90s and stuff. He was doing Nine Inch Nails kind of music when guys that couldn't make the transfer just ended their careers. And he never did that.
Mm.
So that's to me his genius. He's his adaptability. So when you listen to this music, it's to me as a Bowie fan, it's not good. But people okay. love this. Like when I think we did a Facebook poll a long time ago about 80s movie songs. And people were like all into this. I wasn't
one of them.
I don't know.
Well, he goes through the door, or like she goes through the door to these helping hands, and Chris and I were talking about this.
Oh my god,
how cool is this? This is like
that is one of the best scenes.
Holy shit!
Absolutely, man.
This is a different kind of puppetry.
Yep.
How yep. amazing is that?
It is
fantastic.
I can watch this scene alone and at any time because it's just the what they do is absolutely amazing.
Absolutely,
the well of helping hands.
I was telling Dave and all like. When they were filming it, the hands, whoever has these hands, go right to it.
Yep.
Right to the mouth. Boom. Here's a mouth. Boom, a nose. Boom, eyes. Like it wasn't like, shit, this one was here. Boom, they knew where to go immediately.
And the other amazing thing that struck me in this viewing is that they don't do the same trick twice. It's always a different way to do the mouth or a different way to do the eyes. Some have a nose, some don't. It's not just different sets of hands doing the same thing. They're every single one is different.
It was really fantastic.
Yeah.
Do they do any kind of puppetry like this in any other Muppet things, or is this unique to this movie?
Chris would be able to answer that better than me.
I don't recall ever seeing anything like this. It's really
unbelievable. I mean, like, it's doing puppetry without a puppet.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
That's what I think, like, we've already kind of touched on that. The imagery of this movie, because beyond that, the labyrinth itself is a classic practical set, that oubliette and the talking walls.
Yes.
That kind of stuff, whether or not you like the movie, you can't help but respect the filmmaking.
Yep.
There's that scene where when Boggle's like, follow me, I know the way, and he picks up a door, puts it.
Oh, that is so awesome.
Opens it, oops, wrong door, shuts it and opens it again the other way.
When she's in the oubliette.
And it doesn't even look like, I don't see anything fake.
Yeah.
When she's drawing the lipstick arrows on the thing and those two little guys keep flipping the tile. That, it looks like two miniature people flipping a tile.
Yes, it does. Seriously. It does.
So that's impressive. I mean, whatever you want to think about this, we'll get to our final reviews eventually. That kind of stuff, to me, holds up. In a way that you respect it more because it's done.
It's with, for real.
It's done with practical things and hands moving those things, not some guy sitting at a computer.
Correct.
Can do whatever he wants.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
All right. Well, Bowie comes back later with a bigger penis.
I don't think my bulge was appropriate.
Only subtly spinning two glass balls for some reason and can't account for where the third went.
That's right. It's in his pants. There's a full shot of his penis when Hogwarts on his knees.
Yeah,
I know.
Saw that.
I was like,
he was right there.
Yeah.
That was holy shit. And you get those, what are they called? The cleaners?
Oh, yeah.
That's a high moment. I mean, there's a lot of high moments. Although Bowie cannot throw a ball. That's a British dude that's never played Little League.
Yeah, you're right.
That's you got true. Other encounters along the way. The old guy with the bird growing out of his head looks like the bird from Up.
Yeah, it does. Yes, it does.
I loved looking this up and realizing that was Frank Oz, because it's for once not sounding like exactly like Frank Oz's voice. I mean, not that Frank Oz is not talented. He's extremely talented. one of my heroes, but his voice range is not broad. This was nice to not be able to recognize him in something.
I didn't even think about that. That's a good point. Yeah. It's like Miss Piggy is Grover, is Yoda, is Fozzie. This is different.
And it's all him because I just watched American Werewolf in London this week to prepare for Halloween Horror Nights, and he was in that, and he just might as well just had said Waka 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 because it was just Fozzie Bear. Fozzie Bear is just Frank Oz back in the 80s.
And the test administrator in Spies Like Us.
Yep. And the guy at the window checking out John Belushi and Blues Brothers.
There you go. That sums it all up. But that bush maze is shortly after that, and I kept waiting for Nicholson to pop out of there with an axe. And she comes out with these little guards attacking that monster that looks like it's from Big Trouble in Little China. That's Ludo, right?
Right, yep.
Is Ludo like one of your favorite characters in this?
I have to say it's cute.
I like him.
Ludo friend.
Yeah.
Well, this led me to my first, I guess, revelation, because I hadn't seen this in a while. I should have tried to show it to my son. He wasn't interested. But I'd seen this when I was younger. And I never noticed, really, there's pretty deliberate shot when she's in her room of all the books that are in her room.
Yeah.
So this Ludo really looks like the beast in Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Which is one of the books in her room. You guys are the experts here. Are all of the books that are in her room represented? Because along with Where the Wild Things Are, there's Wizard of Oz. Like, there's the Goblin City, which could be like the Emerald City. There's Through the Looking Glass, and there's like the Brothers Grimm fairy tales. Do you think that because this is her fantasy or her hallucination, depending on what she's taking, are all of the books that are in her room are represented in the story, do you think?
Not just the books, but everything in her room.
Yeah, even everything.
The stuffed animals, the pictures on her mirror, the trinkets even, on her dressing table. Everything is in this movie.
Even Bowie, there's like some kind of toy.
Yeah. Everything in her room is in the labyrinth.
There's a Jareth, you know, whatever, doll.
Something.
And when you get to my favorite scene at the end, which we'll get to, it's that M.C. Escher painting that's right by her bed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything in her bedroom is in a labyrinth.
So do you think that Ludo is supposed to be like the thing from Where the Wild Things Are? I mean, they made a movie of that, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. They kept calling him a monster.
He's sweet.
Yep. He is sweet. And I read again. I went on trivia and I saw like how he was in the guy in the costume, how he got up, how he moved around. So fucking impressive.
Uh-huh.
So is this the kind of stuff that they would do? Like, as I know that if you listen to Carol Spinney does like Big Bird.
Yes.
But if you ask those people and you read Carol Spinney's book, they would never say that it's a costume. Big Bird is a puppet.
Right. Yeah.
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 True.
So is that the same case with someone like Ludo?
Yep.
Yeah.
They don't consider him a guy in a costume.
No, because he's actually puppeteering it. He's got a monitor inside. A costume you would be able to see out of.
Yeah.
Is that the case with Sweetums?
Yep.
Yep.
So that reminded me of that too. It's a puppet, but on a grand scale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a full body puppet.
Amazing.
It really is.
The puppetry, I mean, in this thing is amazing. Like, I'm like speechless because of the imagery in this movie. It's the little touches in this movie that make it still, I guess, beloved.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't disagree at all.
All of that is followed by the worst and bad green screen film. Yeah.
There's awful, dancing fraggles.
Those pink things with the bad song. It's the worst part of the movie. I mean, that had to have been bad in 86.
This is always... And I don't want to say it in a bad way. This is Jim Henson always, apart from, well, and in Muppets as well, but in his filmmaking, there was always one thing that he pushed the limits of and that maybe technology was not ready for. And this is the one in this movie.
Do you agree, Chrissy?
Yeah. This is not one of my favorite scenes.
Yep. Okay. He wanted to do a green screen with a very feathery, very detailed puppet, and it just could not be done then. It can be done now very easily digitally, and I don't even mean digital animation. I mean, a computer can pick apart to the detail those feathers and the green screen and get rid of them, and you wouldn't have those giant black masking marks anymore. He tried it. He tends to do this with movies apart and then, outside the Muppets. He always, and some, and again, I don't mean to not say he does this in the Muppets, but more so outside the Muppets. He always tries to push something just a little farther than it can do, and that's what happened here.
Well, it's unfortunate.
Yep. It is.
And I guess, I mean, I was, and not that I'm afraid to say anything bad about Jim Henson to the two of you, but I'm glad, almost glad to hear you say that this to you still doesn't hold up, especially Christy, like being at your house and seeing that there's framed pictures of Jim Henson in your home, like for you to still say with a critical eye, this doesn't hold up.
And I think I'd say that because I think he would say it too. He was very aware of when things worked and didn't work and would actually take that, what he learned, and tried to make it work and improve upon what didn't. So I am comfortable saying that because I think he would be the first to say this particular thing was farther than was able to do. But from that, I learned this and now we can do this. So I think he would actually say something like that with this scene.
Like this is the kind of movie like George Lucas always redoes movies and blah, blah, blah. You wish Henson was still alive to make a decision. Hey, let's redo this and reshot the shit and make it better.
If he were to do a sequel, he would do a scene reminiscent of this, but it would blow this away and might be one of the most memorable things in the new movie if he were alive today, I think.
Yeah.
All right, well, you get more encounters. She encounters a lot of people along the way. The one-eyed fox in the Bog of Stench, which is Sir Didymus, is that right?
Didymus!
Okay. So Ludo can control rocks by singing.
He can sing and calm, yes.
I was confused by that part.
Why?
Because they're trying to get across that bog.
Yeah.
And Hoggle tells them that they can't even touch the water.
I thought that one, because when it came off the ground,
they're stepping out of the water.
They're covered with water.
I know, yeah. I
did think that.
Aren't they stepping on the stench?
Yeah.
But real fast.
Okay,
but so the bottom of their feet doesn't count.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
Some of them are wearing shoes.
I'm curious if anyone else even thought this, apart from Christy, but when Sir Didymus would fight, as soon as he would fight, I knew, without even looking it up, that Dave Goles was doing this because it was every bit of Gonzo's movement when he gets excited. I didn't know if this reminded you guys of any particular Muppet when you saw this.
No, it did not.
I knew exactly it was Dave Goles when I saw him move, because I was like, oh, those are all Gonzo moves right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a Muppet SS-centric moment for you.
I guess so, yeah.
I did like, though, a lot how they made a Muppet out of the dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
When it would look around the corner.
When it was shaking or something. Yeah, I did like that.
It looked good.
Yeah. They used to do that with Fufu, too.
Okay.
They've done it with Fufu, too.
I did get tired a few times, though, of seeing that puppet strapped to the back of that dog.
Yeah, oh, I laughed at that every time.
I want Pebbles to do that for Halloween.
And it was, like, very slowly falling off.
Yeah, falling off.
That bothered me. I mean, I'm trying to be fair here, but...
Yeah, I could see that. I laughed at it, though, each time. It gets funnier each time.
All right, well, she eats the peach and starts tripping.
Tripping even more so.
While Bowie plays with his balls. And there's some kind of Eyes Wide Shut party thing going on.
I didn't understand that at all.
And it's very romantic. Were you as uncomfortable as I was?
I was, because pedophile, it was like, she's a young girl, and how old are you?
She's 15.
Why are you stalking her?
And Kevin Clash is in the corner going, if I was only a little boy.
Oh!
And you know who choreographed that?
Who?
Gates McFadden.
Yep.
Who's that?
Dr. Crusher from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Jeez. He's a choreographer?
She was, yeah. And she's actually in the scene, uncredited.
Which one is Gates McFadden?
The redhead.
The redhead.
Oh my God.
Trying to think, what would you know her from outside of that? Franklin and Bash. Mad About You. She was Mad About You.
Oh, my God. I hate Mad About You.
Okay. Then that's probably about it. Party of Five. She was on an episode.
I know who you mean now.
Okay.
Because you said the redhead. That scene is gross.
It's creepy.
It's really gross.
It's creepy.
And I didn't realize she's hard to age. But I went back, I watched the movie, and even not knowing how old she was, I was uncomfortable. But then I went back and did the math to see how old she was.
Yeah.
No good.
What's the age between Bella and her?
How old is he in this movie, do you think? Is he his late 30s, maybe?
Yeah.
And she's 15.
So 15 years.
15. So let's see. He was.
That's illegal.
He was 39.
Really?
That's even worse. I think. Is that right? Let me do the math here quick. It's 86, right?
86. Assuming they filmed it in 85.
Yeah, she was 38, 39, depending on when they filmed it.
All right. I'm surprised they...
That was weird.
I'm not surprised they... Like, that scene was... They could have had her go into a trance and whatever happened.
Yeah.
Without it being romantic. He certainly was, like, coming on to her.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, that one, I don't think my son got that far in the movie, but it, not that he would know she was 15. But that's uncomfortable. So if you're going to watch this with your kids...
Although they made her not look 15 at that part.
I'm not sure if that's good or bad.
Yeah, I know.
That makes it worse.
Now you're like on pageant kit level of creepy.
Well, you got another new character, that bag lady that's going to be an episode. Yeah. That's going to be an episode 7.
I thought the same thing.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like the same thing.
The same idea.
It's like a bunch of shit on her back.
Yeah, and the hands controlling the head. Yeah.
They're thanks, J.J. Abrams. Now you're redoing Labyrinth because it didn't suit your needs.
Jerk. There you go. They're basically hoarders. They're trying to turn her into one.
Yeah.
And I can't. I realize at this point I can't stop staring at Jennifer Connelly's eyebrows.
I always heard about this. I don't even think I even.
Oh man,
looked at them.
They're thick, and it seems like they comb them up. So they're like wispy.
Yeah.
There's some serious eyebrows going on there.
I never noticed.
I mean, she's a beautiful woman now.
She is.
Like, do you like her as an actress?
Not really.
What have you seen her in? You've seen her in stuff.
Beautiful Mind and The Hawk. Like, there's not much I've seen her do, actually.
I think she's a good actress. You know,
and the one in Target.
And the one in Target.
Is she married? She's married to somebody famous, isn't she?
I think she is.
Who's she married to?
Oh, let's see.
It's like another...
If only we had some kind of box connected to everything in the world that could answer questions like that with a few clicks of a keyboard.
Named Google. Or IMDb.
What is that?
Paul Bettany.
Yes.
Bettany, that's it. Okay.
She's married to Vision, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think she's a great actress. I mean, I've always enjoyed her. And Matt's right, once you get past the first part of the movie... She does become enjoyable to watch.
Likeable a little bit, yeah.
But you hate her guts at the beginning.
That's the thing. That's why I hate the beginning. I wish they'd take those 10 minutes out so that you're rooting for her from the get-go, and then the first few things she gets in are much more perilous, and you have much more invested in the character.
Yeah. She has to win you over.
Yeah.
And she does.
She does, but so much happens to her that would be, I think, more of a climax to the or more perilous if I liked her.
Well, you got the battle shortly after that. More rocks save the day. Chickens get run over. Did you see those chickens get run over?
I did not.
Like real chickens when like the people are running and there's Muppets and carts and stuff. I mean, PETA would be all over.
Chickens are fast.
No, they get run over. You should watch that again. I am so tired of watching that puppet hang off that dog though at this point. All right, but then you get to the castle, and this is... It's got to be the highlight of the movie for me. What do you think?
What, that the big door giant?
No, the M.C. Escher, the stairs.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
This is the highlight of the movie. To me, it's the best song, Within You.
Yeah.
And him, there's some effects in that to me, I'm still looking at him going like, how did they do that?
Yeah.
There's that shot of him walking from the underneath of the step.
And he flips right
and
over.
And he flips to the top.
Yeah.
That to me is the best effect in the movie.
It did look cool.
I don't think... In the 80s, in 86, that there would have been another team up that would have been able to pull that off. I mean, Spielberg and Lucas, great storytelling, great filmmaking. But you put Lucas's ILM together with Jim Henson's Screecher Shop, I think that's the only pairing in the 80s that could have pulled that scene off as well as they did.
Matt is 110% correct. Yes.
Yeah.
That team up worked.
Yep.
It's still to this day, we've been talking about imagery a lot. And I love art. And in fact, I was watching a movie about art when Chris came over today.
I was like, what's the shit you're watching?
Yeah, it was Basquiat. And I love art, and people who love, you know, contemporary art love M.C. Escher.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like one of his drawings come to life.
Yeah.
It's so amazing. Did Jared teach Toby how to walk?
I know.
He might have.
Because he starts walking at some point. It's like, maybe he's not that bad for the kid. That Jared-Sarah showdown, though, is good. His package is really bulging at that point. And she remembers her line from the movie finally and defeats him. And Toby finally stops crying.
But the part when she finally says that line, Bo is like he just like that was it. Like, all right,
yeah,
I'm done. It's goodbye.
Well, you and I both watched this movie. We talk about this more when we get to our reviews. There are parts of this movie that are hard for me to get through.
I agree,
but this certainly isn't one of them.
No. Then there's parts where you're like, I'm watching that scene again.
Yeah, like you want to see it more.
Yeah.
I know he's singing during this, but I can't even tell you one line of the song because I'm so captivated by the images on the screen.
Yeah.
Just like I can be so cruel. And that's
South
about
America.
It. the she gets back to her room. The parents come home and they go, did you hear what he said?
Are you home?
Are you home?
Yeah, yes, that's what I said. I was like, why is that even a question?
Yeah.
What kind of parents are they?
She was supposed to stay home and watch the kid, assholes.
Zev Zaneska is a horrible father.
And then he have a check on her.
No! She's up there dancing with puppets in her room.
Yeah, having a little party they're going on, a pillow fight. That's it.
And you get one more time. You remind me of the babe.
Yeah.
Bill of the power. You do. One more time. But that's about it. I mean, like, I went through the movie. I think I hit all the points. Did I miss anything that you guys wanted to talk about?
I liked real fast. I liked the door knocker.
Those were cool.
That was cool.
It's so cool. Like, one has many ears, can't hear. One's in the mouth, can't talk. I'm like, that's genius. That's so cool.
And that puppetry was so good. It almost looked like CGI.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was so fluid.
Even though she almost killed one of them, suffocated.
she's selfish.
Chris did mention something that looked really cool was I think he was talking about the door guard where the door shut in two halves and then the big giant mechanical guard swinging the axe came out.
Yeah,
that was another great visual.
It's so cool seeing that this movie, like, you know, how many years later, and it's still like, I miss that about movies today.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like, it's there's, yeah, when you have one that's doing things like this well, and it is done well, and I think one of the best examples Chris brought up earlier was that freaking door. He pulls a door up off the floor on a wall that seemingly is solid rock, opens it one way, it's a closet, opens the other way, and they go outside with no cut in that scene whatsoever, and it was done completely believable. When practical movies are done, fantasy movies are done believable, they will never not hold up visually, in my opinion. Whereas computer-generated ones will age every year they get older.
Blows your mind. Yep. Like this movie sometimes just fucking blew your mind out.
Yeah, you can watch CGI effects from things that happened 10 years ago and laugh at them. Yep. Like the original Hulk movie or The Rock and that one Mummy movie. Man, well, there's some weird shit in some of those movies. But you can watch this and go, I respect that.
Yeah
absolutely.
All right, how did I do, Christy? My main goal in this was not to piss you off.
You have succeeded, Dave.
Good. You can't go and stay in someone's home and they have a framed picture of Jim Henson and not
looking down at you and your eyes are moving.
Watching me sleep. And you can't and not be worried that you're gonna piss off this wonderful friend and woman of yours that you know. Or Christy. Matt, you are totally sleeping.
I know.
You are sleeping outside.
You are sleeping in Tim's studio room.
Oh.
We did what? We did clean it afterwards. Yeah.
You did like a full disinfection. It was like those things in Monsters Inc. when they come in. Those things in Monsters Inc. when a human is.
It was like the term ET. All those
yeah.
All those people came.
We called one of those crime scene cleanup companies.
And they came with radios instead of guns.
Yeah.
Awesome joke. All right. Well, with Labyrinth, the discussion over, I guess we're ready for our reviews.
All right.
And we're doing this out of five, our original viewing versus our 2015 viewing. Let's save the Muppeteers for last. What do you think, Chris?
Yes, please.
All right. Well, I'll go first.
Okay.
When I saw this when I was very young, it's the kind of thing that blows your mind, especially coming. We grew up with the Muppets and Sesame Street and stuff like this. So this was just a continuation of that. And I would have given it a 4 out of 5 as a young boy. Watching it now, I think it totally holds up. It probably drops a little because of some of those things, like especially that Fraggle Rock scene with the green screen. And my son trying to watch it doesn't understand it because he didn't grow up with it. So I guess if you grew up with this like we did, it's still going to be something that you adore. So I'm dropping it, but only slightly to a 3.5, which to me means it holds up. It's still delightful to watch. So I'm saying 3.5 out of 5. What about you, Chris?
Everything you said, I agree with 100%, and exactly why I gave it a 4 back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But I did drop it a little bit more than you because some of the scenes are just hard to get through, and the songs were awful. And that Fraggle Rock dancing scene, it's horrible. I did 2.5, though.
Okay. So you and I think are in the same boat where, like, if you were to watch this again, would you not watch the whole movie and just hit scenes?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. I think that's maybe a good way to watch it. If you do find yourself watching it and you're like Chris and I, and you're getting a little parts are dragging.
But do you know what was great?
Skip to the parts you know are good.
What's great about this movie, though, I haven't seen it since then in so long. So when I was watching it, for the first time ever, I was really watching the movie, like paying attention. Oh, I remember that. Oh, my God, I remember that. Like, I really had fun watching it, though.
All right. So I'd say that holds up for both of us. Me a little more than Chris, but I wouldn't say that you've slammed it by any means. I guess we'll save Matt for last since this was his pick. Christy, what do you think?
I probably would have given it a 5 as a kid because I was into fantasy and Muppets, two things that are, you know, in this movie. Now you can kind of see, it's kind of like I would have given that Clash of the Titans too because I loved that movie when I was a kid. But now looking at it, just the jerkiness of the stop motion just kind of throws me off, and that's about all that throws me off with this movie. I'd probably give it a 4.5 just because, you know, you can see a little bit more of the technology challenges, but you otherwise I still love it.
Yeah, you can see behind the curtain a little bit.
Yeah,
I like your Clash of the Titans analogy. That's pretty good
because that's a kick-ass movie when you're a kid.
Yeah
That's a good comparison. All right, so Labyrinth is 3 for 3.
Which I'm shocked at it's where it's going. I'm really shocked.
All right, what do you think, Matt?
Well, back when I saw this for the first time in the 80s, it was a solid 4. I didn't have the appreciation of what was going on, so I think if it had been in the 90s, I'd probably say 5. But if Jim Henson was involved and it wasn't the Muppets, I always would say, like, I would always be a little disappointed that it wasn't the Muppets because I was associated to 2. So it'd be a 4. Still a good movie. Still had fun, but it wasn't the Muppets. 4.5s and 5s were saved for the Muppets when Jim Henson was involved when I was a kid. Watching it now, you take out... That's what's nice about what doesn't hold up is that you can actually take them out, the parts out, and ignore it. It's not interwoven in so deep into the movie that it hurts it. So you take out the first 10 minutes, you take out the Bowie songs, you still have a very good movie. The visuals have not changed. The fiery guys don't hold up, but they didn't hold up then either real well. So not much has changed in an adult viewing when you can ignore the things you don't like so easily. So I'm only going to drop it just a hair for that and say, like, much like Dave did, go to 3.5. So holds up. I could watch this again and just and have reason to go back and look for the hidden stuff that I haven't seen because it's been so long since I saw this movie.
Well, there you have it. Wow. Labyrinth holds up.
Unbelievable. I really thought this was going to be just like another, like Conan was for me. I was like, ugh, come on. But But this one, I was really enjoying watching. I could watch it again, like, soon.
Or you'd have to wait a little while.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So if you're going to watch it and you feel yourself dragging a little, skip that sucker ahead, because you know there's good things waiting for you.
Yeah.
So do your own fan edit of Labyrinth while you watch it. You know, cut it down to an hour or an hour and 15 minutes. And I mean, it sounds like the four of us are all saying you're going to enjoy what you see.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, nice job, Matt. Good pick.
Thank you.
Good pick.
Oh, thank the listeners. They actually ultimately picked it.
Thank you, Facebookers.
Yeah.
All right. That means we're on to our top five list.
Oh, boy. And this is a different subject.
This one was very difficult to do. This is the in honor of Mr. Bowie. This is the top five musicians who act.
Which I told you. I told Dave the other day, I was like, I was such an ass. I fucked up. So, I mean, when I first sat down, I'm like, okay, I'm picking Kevin Costner. You know why? He sings.
Yeah, I'm
picking Bruce Willis. You know why? He sings. But there's like, you gotta swap it around.
I'm picking Don Johnson.
Because he sings, yeah.
Patrick Swayze.
It took me a while, but I
so you had to redo your list.
Yeah.
So these are guys that were known first for singing, who then became actors on whatever scale. Well, I'm interested to see what people come up with.
Okay.
Because it's like the kind of thing where, like, actors always want to be rock stars, and rock stars always want to be actors. Some of them are better at it than others.
Right.
I'll tell you, mine isn't even necessarily a 1 to 5. It's just 5 moments I can isolate and that gave me some kind of reaction, not even necessarily good.
All right, that's interesting. We'll do the same order, maybe, then. How about that?
Okay.
Since this was Matt's idea to begin with, we'll save him for last. All right, I came up with a list. How many people do I have on this list? Look at this list. There's like 30 people on this list. 20, 30,
yeah, there you go.
So whittling this down to 5, because I think a lot of musicians actually are half-decent actors.
I can take that name.
And I got a lot on here. But my number 5, and this was with a lot of debating, my number 5 is Mos Def.
Okay.
And I've seen him in exactly 3 movies, I think. And all 3 of them, he's blown me away with how good he is. Especially a movie that I don't think is that good, but his performance is great. And that's 16 Blocks with Bruce Willis. And Bruce Willis is awful in that movie. Mos Def out-acts Bruce Willis in that movie. Be Kind Rewind.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah, is that on your list?
Be Kind Rewind and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I think Mos Def could, forgetting, you know, I love hip-hop and I love rap. I think he's one of my favorite rappers. He could make a living never having rapped as an actor.
Talk about Be Kind Rewind. Talk about a movie that takes the weirdest fucking twist in the middle and is all of a sudden a different movie.
Yeah.
God. So, yeah.
I think he's great. So he's my number 5. And I tell you, there's a lot of deliberation in this. My number 4, and this comes with an asterisk, is Elvis Presley.
I knew that's their shot.
Because in the first 4 or 5 movies, Elvis was an excellent actor. And after that, he was an awful actor. He made 33 movies, I think.
He did.
I've seen them all.
I have not.
I have seen every single Elvis movie, and in the first 5...
I saw one that he sings in.
He is great. In fact, so much so, my favorite Elvis movie is called King Creole. That movie was written for James Dean, and James Dean either couldn't do it or had died. And the producer said, we got to get somebody else. They got Elvis, and Elvis killed it. His first couple movies, King Creole, and I'm not even counting Love Me Tender, because that's not one of my favorite... Jailhouse Rock and Loving You. He does a really good job. After that, every movie was the same. He was a guy in an exotic location that would get the girls and sing shitty songs and barely play the guitar. Elvis could barely play the guitar. And the movies got worse and worse as they went on. But for those first 5, he had the chutzpah of a young James Dean. Not that there is an old James Dean.
James Dean.
Yeah, of James Dean. So Elvis Presley is my number 4 just for the beginning of his career.
I knew it was very nice.
If you look at the later ones, forget about it. I love them still because they're so campy, but they're awful. So he's my number four. My number three, Tim's going to love this one if he listens to this. My number three is Dwight Yoakam.
For Sling, is it Sling Blade?
Is he in Sling Blade?
No.
Yes, he is.
Is he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I wasn't even thinking about that. The movies that stand out to me for him are Panic Room, Four Christmases, and Wedding Crashers. I think he kind of became friends with Vince Vaughn. But especially Panic Room. That's a performance of a diabolical, unbelievable piece of human trash in that movie. And he is so good. And I like his music too. But I think he's another guy. Never having sung a note of country music could be an actor paid in full. He's my number three. Number two, this is going to be on everybody's list, is Will Smith. Because who doesn't like Will Smith? I mean, everybody loves Will Smith.
I don't like his kid.
We learned that last episode of the Gradies.
Will Smith is a great actor. He was not a great rapper. I mean, I love rap music, and people who love rap music don't want to hear Will Smith. He was a pop radio rapper. He was not the kind of rapper that people who like rap like. So he made a good decision and has become, to me, a phenomenal actor. I love watching his movies, and I'll single out I Am Legend as my favorite, I guess. And my number one, and this is with a huge can of bias, is Sting.
What?
Oh, wait. Oh, did you read that he was in contention for the part of Gareth?
No.
Yeah.
I heard him and Michael.
Him and really? Michael Jackson. Yep.
Are you serious?
I meant to bring that up early on before we got to this list to get your reaction. Damn it. That would have worked, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen that. Guaranteed.
Would have worked much better than Michael Jackson. I'm sorry, Chris. This is not a Michael Jackson slam, but Michael Jackson would not have worked in that role.
I agree. I mean, you're Sting and Bowie sometimes to me are the same person. but you're right. I think Michael Jackson, yeah, I love him to death. But yeah, him acting in this movie, yeah, I don't know about that.
Turn back, Sarah. That's it.
The scenes with him and Toby would have taken on a whole new
movie. All right. I knew you were going to go with the kid thing, all right?
And he totally would not have been interested in Jennifer Connelly.
Hoggle.
He would have been all over Hoggle.
He was at
Hoggle.
The right waist height there.
Sting would have been cool too in this.
He would have been cool. Yes, he would have.
Now, I preface this with saying that I am, of anybody that's listening, the biggest Sting fan that you will ever lay ears on. So much so that I named my son after him, his middle name. And
his middle name is Sting?
His middle name is Sumner. As in Sting's real name, Gordon Sumner. And that's
Gordo the Weirdo.
Gordo the Weirdo with my little peepee. No, it's not the gift.
Okay.
I love Sting so much. It's not even worth me getting into. But besides that, I think he is a good actor. I mean, his most famous thing is Dune. I think he sucks in Dune, actually. But I've mentioned several times on many News As podcasts, one of my favorite movies is Brimstone and Treacle. He kills it in that movie, Lock, Stock, and Smoking Barrels. Like, Sting has acted with some of Hollywood's heavy hitters. He was in the movie Plenty with Meryl Streep. He holds his own with Tommy Lee Jones. Like, he can be in movies with guys and still do a good job. And my favorite thing that Sting has ever done is a Saturday Night Live sketch with Steve Martin, who is my other idol. When Steve Martin hosted and Sting was a musical guest, it was a Bond parody where Steve Martin was Bond, but he was cheap.
Oh, God. And okay.
The title of the sketch was Bullets Aren't Cheap.
Yeah.
And Steve Martin was just trying to get anything he could for free, and Sting was the villain. He had an eye patch. I mean, it was like the whole Bond thing.
I remember a little bit.
And he kicks Sting kicks James Bond, played by Steve Martin, out of his club. And as Steve Martin's trying to leave, he grabs a handful of pretzels. He's trying to take them with him, and Sting says, "The pretzels are no longer complimentary."
Sting always has the best moment cameos in Terry Gilliam movies.
Oh yeah!
Like is Adventures in Baron Munchausen a Terry Gilliam movie? Yeah, it is. It is. He was that soldier that did so well that they had him executed because he was making the rest of the army look bad. That was one of the best scenes in that movie.
they bring him before them, and they're like, they take him away, and the look on his face is like, what the fuck? Sting always does it for me, and it's not just because I'm a huge fan. Maybe it is because I'm a huge fan.
That has the only reason why you
pick he's a great actor.
Now, if Terry Gilliam had wrote this instead of Terry Brooks, guaranteed he would have gotten the part.
You're probably
aren't those two
right.
like best friends?
You're probably right. But that's my number one. My number one, Sting. I'm not ashamed. So
don't judge me.
Don't judge me, Chris. What's your top five musicians who act?
Yes, I mostly picked movies that I liked because I liked the movies, and these guys are just in the movies.
Well, maybe that means they helped you like it.
Some no.
Some
not really no.
Like as a joke here, my number five is like almost a tie. Anthony Kiedis and Flea. Because I like Back to the Future 2, and I like Point Break.
Wasn't he Marty McFly's boss? Or no, he was the guy that got him fired because of that scam or something, right?
He was
Needles.
Yeah. Needles, yeah.
He's also the guy that makes him get into the car accident that ruins his life.
But they're both in The Chase, too, with Charlie Sheen.
I forgot about that, with the bodies being dumped.
And that's one of my, like, you know...
I love The Chase.
Guilty Pleasures.
That is a fun movie, and Henry Rollins is in that, too. I forgot about him from my list.
Now, if you ask me for a dollar or $1 million, Anthony Kiedis and Flea, like, what band they're in?
You don't remember
the band? You don't know what band they're in?
That's how bad I am with music.
I think so I told you
this. Hooters or Nothing with you, huh?
Or Michael Jackson, right.
It has to do with something being spicy.
Hot chili peppers, red hot chili peppers.
There you go.
I know that now.
There you go. That was pretty good.
I couldn't tell you that.
Anthony I thought you going to need more clues.
Anthony Kiedis gets his foot blown off in Point Break.
Yeah. I just love that movie. You know, that was my number five as a joke.
It's not bad. They both do a fine job.
Number four is probably worse than this. This is awful.
Mm-hmm.
Awful, awful, awful. But I picked the movie because I love the actor who's in the movie, and this woman's in it with him, Tina Turner.
No.
Oh, God.
No. I love Mel. I love Mad Max. You know, it's the worst Mad Max I've met out there. But she does a pretty good job.
She's brutal.
Looking all creepy and weird looking.
Have you ever seen her in anything else?
She's need another hero.
And I love that song, too. Yeah.
You've never seen Tommy, have you?
No.
God, she's geez, awful.
The Acid Queen.
Yeah.
That movie's awful.
But this is a movie that I pick because I just dislike Mel Gibson.
So you like Mel Gibson, so Tina Turner gets on your list.
Just so happens to be on the list, yeah.
She sucks.
I didn't say she was great.
She's expatriotized herself. Don't talk about her.
What are you doing over here? Little baby.
The dog is making love to Chris.
Hello.
Now, number three is one of my all-time favorite films with one of Matt's all-time favorite actors.
I know what it is.
And she only made three films. The rest I don't care about. But you play this song
in the bathtub.
In the bathtub. Oh, fuck. I just caught that. And it's The Bodyguard, Frank Farmer, Whitney Houston. I love Whitney Houston as a singer, and I love this movie. It's awful.
What else was she in besides Waiting to Exhale?
There's another one that just came out when she died.
Just came out.
It came out after she died, yeah.
You know what she was good in? The
girl movie. No, that was Exhale, huh? Never
mind. Yeah, she played the fairy godmother in the Moesha Cinderella.
Yeah, she did.
I remember seeing that and being like, that wasn't bad.
But I love her. I love her songs. I love Body.
She's an awful actress.
And Matt loves Kevin Costner, so it all comes together.
She's bad. She's bad in that movie.
In The Bodyguard?
Yeah.
No,
she's bad.
No, she's not.
Yes, she is.
No, she's not.
And she paid with it with her life.
Number two.
No, me saying that.
Number two is sometimes I think he's not a good actor.
Kevin Costner, you're right.
No,
asshole.
But he's but he's in every movie out there now. Every single movie he's in it, and I watch
Chris Pine.
Fucking Chris Pine.
I watch his reality show. I watch all of his movies. Some are great. Some are just him being, hey, it's Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, God. Hey, get away from my daughter.
Hey, yeah, it's the same.
I saw a Transformer.
It's the same. Yeah, hey, it's the same thing. But I do enjoy seeing Mark Wahlberg up on the screen doing something
cool. You maniacs, you blew it up. Planet of the Apes. Hey. Was he in this?
Yeah, he is.
Just a second.
He has talent.
He has talent. I mean, I do like him.
He's an Oscar-nominated actor. He was nominated for The Departed.
That was a great movie.
Actually, he's not bad. I just like making fun of that. Chris did that, I think, on your Transformers Age of Extinction review, the whole hey, and I've been stuck in my head every time I hear his name now.
Hey. Say hi to your mom for me. Hey.
Yeah, the
it's always the same thing.
What's the guy's name? Andy Samberg?
Yeah,
he does that killer impression of him. His sports movies are good, like The Fighter.
I like
is
that.
Really good, more so for Invincible. Christian Bale and Invincible. Yeah. Those are good movies. And I remember you and I went and saw Fear. It was like his first movie.
Yes.
That was good. He was like instantly good. He wasn't much of a musician.
No, I do like that
feel
one,
it, so. Feel it.
Yeah.
Come on.
That's about it.
Didn't Donnie write that?
Probably.
That's what they say on Wahlburgers anyway. Donnie's like, I wrote this song for my brother Mark.
He's a pain in the ass. I don't like him.
Well, Donnie could have been on your list too.
Could have. You watch his show too.
Well, Sixth Sense, he's in one of those Saw movies. He's also in the show with Tom Selleck, Great Cops, Blue Bloods, is that what it's called?
I think so. He is on that show.
He's not a bad actor either. You just don't like him.
I don't like him very much.
You like Mark.
I like Mark. Mark's sexy. In the underwear? Come on.
Calvin Klein.
Number one, Dave already said it, Will Smith.
Na 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 na.
Huh.
I mean, all of his films, I've seen them all, and you're right. I mean, I Am Legend, like, it's fantastic. Even the one that just came out, a couple months ago, which I've seen, I don't even know what the title is now.
That's been great.
He was a swindler. I don't even know what it's called.
It was him and that girl from that Nicolas
Switch.
Cage.
Yeah.
No.
Switch is really funny.
Is that with Paul Blart?
Yeah. He's really good in that.
I like Will Smith and anything he's in. He's so, like, he's just like... charismatic guy, and I think he's
cool. Gotten better over the years. That's why I put him up, because at first, when he was first on stuff, remember when, and that was even a plot line of Jersey Girl with Kevin Smith, it was like that Will Smith would never be anything but the Fresh Prince.
Yeah.
and
you still think that at times.
With his first couple of movies, I was like, no. Yeah. Like Independence Day and stuff like that.
But I mean, you but and I as, know Bad Boys.
Yeah. As he's gone on, he has slowly gotten better and better, to the point where when he's in things, he's an Oscar. He was nominated for an Oscar, right? For Ali, maybe?
I think so. The only thing I hate about Will Smith is the son.
Wow.
Can't let that go.
I cannot. That is my list.
All right, well, good list, Chris. And we'll do Christy next then, I guess.
Okay, my number five, just because it's been on like every day on Sci-Fi, it feels like. Mos Def for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh. I thought I was going to be the only one.
No, I like Mos Def. Number four, we're going to go old school. I would say Bing Crosby in The Road to Morocco. God.
Wow.
Bing Crosby.
We're boom, 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 Morocco. Bette Midler, number three, Bette Midler.
One of Chris's favorites.
Chris is just laughing at you.
No, I just... Batman,
okay. I remember going to Planet Hollywood here, the one at Disney, and Chris is like, I don't care where we sit, as long as we don't sit near any Bette Midler shit. Where do they sit us? Right next to Bette Midler's dress from Hocus Pocus.
You love Bette Midler, Christy?
I gotta represent my Hawaii girls. She's
is from she
Hawaii.
From Hawaii?
Yeah. She actually grew up down the road from where I grew up. One of my neighbors used to babysit, or used to know her brother.
This is a little side story, but Lou, I remember, did he tell stories that he knew where she lives in New York and used to work for a photographer?
Lou from Dial Up Movies?
Yeah, I think it was Bette Midler.
Sweet Lou?
Sweet Lou.
I must admit, and I'm not a homosexual, I love Bette Midler.
You don't have to be homosexual to love Bette Midler, it's okay.
You can be part woman.
If you had...
Might be right.
You can be a woman or a gay dude and like Bette Midler. I think she's hilarious.
I used to watch her show. Bette, is it what it's called, I guess?
She's great. And her involvement in Seinfeld alone is wonderful. Like, that's a good show. I didn't even write her on my list. What's your favorite Bette Midler, Christy?
I actually like Down and Out in Beverly Hills.
Oh,
That's good.
Yeah, that's a good Grady's one.
Yeah, I haven't seen that like since it came out. What else do you like? I mean, are you like a...
For the Boys.
For the Boys is good. All women love beaches. Are you one of those women?
No, I am not. Okay. I can't stand Barbara Hershey.
Barbara Hershey is the worst.
I do.
And
not
if it was just like if you could watch a cut of that movie that was just Bette Midler, it would be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But every time Barbara Hershey's on, you're like, ah, shit. I like the Bette Midler. Do you guys remember your Disney people? Do you remember the backlot tour when there was the Bette Midler movie that you had to sit through as part of the backlot tour? They showed you a short film that was starring Bette Midler, and then they showed you how they shot it.
No, I don't remember
that at all.
that was like a big part of the backlot tour for like a long time. It was her. It was called like the lottery, and she won like the lottery, and the lottery ticket blew out the window. And it was her chasing this ticket all over town. And they used the set from the backlot tour, like all those cities and stuff like that, like the cityscape that was in Dick Tracy.
Oh, it seems really familiar. Like, I feel like I've heard of it.
Oh, let me go and check it. Oh, no, wait. That attraction's gone, along with all the other attractions at Hollywood Studios.
Yeah, there's only one thing open at Hollywood Studios anymore.
Yeah. Star Tours and the crap movie ride.
Shit.
My number two is Cher in Moonstruck.
Snap out of it!
Yeah, I like Cher.
Cher in Mermaids. If you want to be happy for the rest of your life.
And then number one, I drank the Kool-Aid, Will Smith in MIB.
Yeah!
In MIB only.
Yeah, you're a huge Men in Black.
Yes.
So that to me is one of his worst.
Really?
I enjoy it a lot.
First one was good. Second one, not so much. Third one was better.
I can't stand
the second. Movies. Second one was horrible.
And the tail?
Dog's tail is hitting the tray table that the microphone is on. Dish, 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 dish. Cher is a good actress.
If I could turn back time.
Somebody asked us on our Facebook page that we should one day do the mask, not the cartoon mask.
No, but mask.
The live action mask with
Eric Stoltz.
I love that movie.
I never saw that movie.
She is so good in that movie. So is Sam Elliott and Eric Stoltz. I mean, that's a great movie.
I haven't seen that in decades.
Yeah.
I hadn't even considered Cher. Good what list, Christy.
Thank you.
All right, Matt.
Okay. All right, my list, it's not so much the best five. It's like I said, it's just I was having a hard time to pick, so... There's some of them have a story behind them. Some of them, they're just good actors. Well, few. Or so, well, one. So starting off with my number five on my list, not necessarily in any order. When I saw he was in this movie, I was like, I had no desire to see this movie until he was in it. And I'm like, all right, I got to see what this movie's about and what this guy is doing in this movie. And it was Mick Jagger in Free Jack.
I am a Free Jack. Yeah, yeah. I remember that.
Oh, so, my God.
Not necessarily a good performance, but I would have not seen the movie had he not been in it. So there's something for that.
I remember that. We used to... Is that one of the previews we used? No, we used to watch. That preview used to be on all the time.
Yeah.
With Emilio Estevez crashing the car. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And a Formula One racer, yeah.
And Anthony Hopkins. What a shitty movie.
I think that was like one of the mandatory trailers for whatever company put that out because they were trying to promote the crap out of it and it just wasn't good. So my number four, I'm surprised. I really thought I was going to be the only one that had this on its list, and it turns out I'm one of three people, and it's Mos Def in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And mainly because first when I heard he was going to be playing Ford Prefect, I'm like, what? Because I had very specific... I don't know, expectations of this movie, because I'm a huge fan of the book and the radio drama and the TV show. And when I saw he was being cast, I was like, there's no way I'm going to like him. And he grew on me throughout the movie. By the end of the movie, I absolutely loved him in that role. That was very, very surprising to me.
Mos Def wins the day.
No kidding, right? Another instance of this guy's an actor, and this is his first role, and I have him on here for two reasons, and it's Ice-T, first for New Jack City, which he was excellent in, and then the more obscure and will not be on anyone's list for anything, Johnny Mnemonic, because he is the only person in that movie that actually tries.
That's funny.
Everyone else, Dolph Lundgren, Keanu Reeves, they're just there for the money. Ice-T's actually performing in this movie. You need to hack your own brain.
He's on one of those CSI
type big shows.
Yeah.
What's he on? Is it one of those?
No, NCIS.
No, it's
Law and Order.
Law and Order. Those movies.
Is it Law and Order? I thought it was something even beyond that.
He's on one of those major like network shows.
Yeah, he's been on that for a while now.
I was thinking about him too. Him and Ice Cube.
Ice Cube, Vanilla Ice, and Ice Tea.
For Trespass. Remember that?
With Bill Paxton?
Yeah.
That's a cool ass movie.
Ice Cube, to me, is a better actor than Ice Tea.
So, yeah.
But Ice Cube always plays the same character. I was going for like guys that can do lots of stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And Ice Cube always plays the same guy.
Yeah.
He's a good actor, but it is the same thing.
My number two, like Dave said, it's on everybody's list. It's Will Smith, and specifically the Will Smith in everything up until Wild Wild West, and then I get a little more selective.
And that was a bad film.
Yep. And then not everything he was in after that I was necessarily a fan of. But before that, I'd watch him in just about everything he'd do. And my number one, I can't believe this isn't on anyone else's list. How can it not be on everyone's list? It is the queen herself, the queen of singers turned actors, the one and only Olivia Newton-John.
I knew it.
Dave said, I guarantee you on Mass List would be Olivia Newton-John.
Well, you were right, Dave.
You did say that.
I knew it.
She deserves to be number one on my list for many reasons.
For just Xanadu, is it good enough for
Xanadu,
you?
Xanadu, despite the fact she was in Greece.
Shut up. Despite the fact she was in Greece.
Name another one of your movies that you've seen, honey.
Tomorrow. T-O-O-Morrow.
What's that?
That was before Xanadu. That was a futuristic musical movie that only I have seen.
She was in Two of a Kind, a reunite with Travolta.
You're gonna be a strange place.
She can sing, she can dance, she can do it all, and her daughter can do none of it.
Yeah.
What is her daughter like? Talentless.
You haven't seen the 30th anniversary or the 35th anniversary Xanadu duet they did together?
I can't say that I have.
It is you have to see
it's
it.
It's a train
wreck. You have to see it. It is atrocious.
Well, those are good. I guess Will Smith really wins the day.
But Mos Def was right there.
Yeah, that's surprising.
He's on all four lists. I'm Mos Def number two. I wrote a list. I wrote a long list. I'll just mention other people because I know like somebody will be like, how come you didn't mention so-and-so? We got Cyndi Lauper, Danny Elfman, Dave Matthews, Dolly Parton, LL Cool J, Jack White, Eminem, Frank Sinatra. Chris, you mentioned Harry Connick Jr. yesterday.
I did.
He was on my short list for Independence Day, but it wasn't enough to edge out the other ones that made it for their single appearance.
Chris, what's his best movie?
It's the one that we always, I think it was
Copycat.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
You're dead.
Memphis Belle. In the audience. Yeah.
Memphis Belle.
Jeez. Memphis Belle.
No, you're right. Yeah. I just forgot about that
he's
one, too.
He is a Memphis Belle. Huey
and
Lewis.
Dolphin Tales. Come on now.
That's right. He's in both those, isn't he?
He is.
Huey Lewis, Jeff Healey, Joan Jett, The Beatles, Johnny Cash, Keith Richards, Rick Springfield, Kenny Rogers, Gene Simmons, Madonna, Michael Jackson, Prince, Neil Diamond, Tina Turner, or you said Tina Turner. Tom Waits is actually half decent.
He's in Jim Jarmusch movies.
Yeah, and he's in Mystery Men. And the one that was my number 5.5 is Tim McGraw.
Is that because he's Tug's son?
No.
Oh.
He actually is a pretty damn good actor, Tim McGraw.
Is he in some sports movie, a football movie or something?
He's in The Blind Side.
Okay.
Oh, he is?
He's Sandra Bullock's husband.
Yeah.
Tim McGraw is a good actor. Like, he could give up a singing. He won't, but, you know.
Right.
Kiss and the Phantom of the Park almost made it on my list, but I have a feeling that we'll have an opportunity to put them on a more appropriate list later as an ensemble. So I did not. That was on my short list.
I think that would be appropriate because Kiss and the Phantom of the Park is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But Gene Simmons has been in other stuff.
True.
He was on
One of the Dead or Alive.
Yeah, and he was on like Miami Vice and stuff like
wasn't
that.
Wasn't he in that robot movie with Tom Selleck? Wasn't he the bad guy?
Yeah. What was it called?
I forget. I want to say Short Circuit, but that's not it.
Number Five Alive.
I used to watch that all the time. What the hell was that called? That used to be on all the time.
I know it's...
Is Cynthia Rhodes in that?
Rothrock?
Or maybe... No.
Cynthia Rothrock.
The thing the thing with Tom Selleck, or is that Nancy Allen?
What, RoboCop?
No, the thing with Tom Selleck.
I'm trying to find it.
Calm down, Dave. Matt's looking.
Tom Selleck, I need to know now.
I know, I need to know too. Is there Mean Nuts? Oh, what the hell was that called? It's not jumping out on IMDb. All right, I got to type in Tom Selleck robot movie.
You got Mean Nuts?
Huh?
Hey, so I want to go like Guyver. That ain't it.
The Guyver? That's Mark Hamill.
It's one of those kind of films.
Runaway.
Runaway! Who's the girl in it?
I'm looking right now. Cynthia Rhodes.
Cynthia Rhodes. I was Gene fucking Simmons. Right.
And Christy Alley was in it, too.
Oh, God.
I'm gone.
Scientology.
And
all right, well, those are our lists, and you know, there are other actors that are in things. I was going for stuff, it seems like everybody else was, that actors that weren't playing themselves, like that were actually playing a role, because, like, Bruce Springsteen was in High Fidelity, playing Bruce Springsteen.
Right, yeah.
He was awful. I mean, it was like...
Playing himself, he was awful?
Yeah, it was like, you know, like, he's giving John Cusack advice in his dream state, you know, like, I was going for actors playing roles, and I think that's what we all did.
Alanis Morissette was God in Dogma.
That's true.
Yeah, it is true.
That's not a bad one, actually. She was actually pretty good.
She didn't say a word.
She didn't say a word.
Didn't she, like, boop somebody on the nose?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, good list. So, like, you know, tell us we're wrong, improve on our list, give us your list on our Facebook page, because this is a vast list. Like, you know, a lot of... Like I said, a lot of singers want to become actors and vice versa. All right. So it's time to pick our next movie. And we've all decided as a group that we will continue to let y'all pick our movie.
Right.
So we're going to keep the same three that the losers have chosen. For Chris, mm-hmm. that would be Crocodile Dundee. For Christy, that will be Beetlejuice. And for me, that would be E.T. And Matt is going to add... another variable to this equation.
I love this.
Y'all are going to be able to vote again. So Matt's going to give us a clue, I guess.
All right, I'm going
to
give you a clue. I'll give you two clues. I'll give you the what do you call it? What is Chris like? The tagline? But first, I'll say I cannot believe we've not done a movie from this kind of period and section of the 80s movies yet that I can recall. So, all right, the tagline is the story of a man who wanted to keep the world safe for democracy and meet girls.
Is it a Bill Murray movie?
It is a Bill Murray movie.
Yeah, I know what you're talking.
Meatballs.
Yeah. No, not Meatballs.
Stripes.
It is Stripes.
Stripes.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a great one. This was actually one of my picks way back when. I was like, oh, I want to pick Stripes. And this is great.
I don't think we've done like a Stripes, Caddyshack type movie genre. I mean, we've done comedies, but not that group of that. I don't know what you would even call that. That kind of clique of movie makers back in that period of 80s yet that I can recall.
These four choices. I don't care the fuck what we do now.
Yeah.
like they're all just, I love them all.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's going to be up to the Facebook community whether we review as our next film Stripes, chosen by Matt.
Razzle Dazzle.
Crocodile Dundee, chosen by Chris.
Yes.
And I know that Scott, especially out there, is an Australian gentleman.
I'm trying.
He's been asking for this for like...
Since episode one.
Yeah, for like years. So yeah. Scott, you know, it's out there, buddy. Get the entire continent/country of Australia.
Yes, all your friends.
To vote for Crocodile Dundee. Christy has chosen the legendary Beetlejuice. And I've chosen E.T. mainly because it scares the shit out of Matt. Yeah. And I want to hear him squirm. So Matt will put it up there, I guess. And y'all can choose what we do next.
All right.
All right. So we don't know what we're doing next.
No, nope.
We don't.
I love the intrigue.
I do.
All right, Chris, take us on out. You have anything to say?
How long was this episode? 5 hours?
I got an outro. Every decade has good movies, but only the great ones are discussed on the Gradies.
Listen to that.
I'm trying to get a Phillies full count reference in there.
That was fantastic. Classic.
That's classic.
Get Jack to say it.
Yeah, he won't say it.
I'll say it backwards.